This netcast is brought to you by the 8 Days of Geek Network.
All of your ears are belong to us.
Today on Error Code 8, we cover the Acer Iconia A700 leaks, the HTC bootloader unlock, Verizon and their $2 fee, tell them where they can put that, the Raspberry Pi, Gordon's supercomputer, and reasons that movie theater sales are dropping. Stay tuned. You're listening to Error Code 8. I'm Jesse Miller. I'm going to be your main host for this one. Joining me, as always, and I can't actually say that like I do on all the other shows, because this is the first show. This is episode 1. Joining me on this episode is Sam Briggs.
Happy New Year, everyone, and welcome to the show.
Woo! This is the tech podcast for 8 Days of Geek. As you know, or as you've noticed, I don't have a catchphrase for this yet. Hey, if you got some ideas, I'd love to have them. I was going to say, we kick around the tech news like a 12-year-old kicks around a kickball, but that sounds stupid, so we're not going to do that. Anyway, this is purely tech, and if you weren't planning on a tech podcast, then you need to check your schedule and look for the room you're supposed to be in. No, you stay right where you're at, because you're going to love it. You're going to love it. Love it. Anyway, so... little bit of introduction. I am the editor-in-chief of 8daysofgeek.com. Those of you who have listened to the 8 Days of Geek podcast know who I am, recognize my sultry, beautiful radio voice, and probably came back just to hear it. So I'm sorry, Sam, but they're not here to hear you.
I won't hold that against them.
Anyway, I am very heavy into a tech background. I am just geeky as geeky can be. So... You know my story. Sam, we haven't heard a lot about you. You've been on a couple episodes of the 8 Days of Geek podcast. You helped me out with some of the techier episodes, for instance, the WebOS announcements, and I believe Apple TV we had you on. Mm-hmm. Tell the folks a little bit about you and your favorite gadgets, your background, that kind of stuff.
Well, I am a more of a hardware guy than a software guy, though... when it comes to software, I stick with Linux. I'm definitely a huge Linux fan. WebOS being my favorite mobile operating system, and that's why I've definitely been on for every WebOS event. Has there been any coverage on the open sourcing of WebOS, by the way?
Nobody covers WebOS. No, actually, that happened, I believe that happened during our big change
break
for the podcast, so...
okay.
We'll cover that as we go along here.
I had to sneak it in. I used to do anyway, computer gaming. My favorite device is sitting next to me here, and it's my gaming computer. It's 2 years old now. It's not quite up to date, just a dual core. But it's got its Windows 7. I'm sitting at 8 gigs of RAM. 120 gigabyte solid state drive, because I really dislike hard drives now. Let's see. I'm still using a Palm Pre.
We are kind of
for,
sort of,
that's how dedicated.
We are kind of sort of polar opposites. You like Linux, and I'm actually sitting here on a MacBook Pro 15 inch with an i7.
Mm-hmm. I've got two Ubuntu laptops set up in my closet office. I've got Ubuntu running on my touchpad, working on getting Backtrack working, and with a custom hosted wireless card for packet injection. Yeah, no, Linux is definitely the way to go. I can't really do all that with a Mac.
That's awesome. All right. Well, so you've heard a little bit about us. I hope you haven't left quite yet, because we are going to cover some tech news today. And I know that's super exciting for all of you, because you've obviously tuned in for it to be tech. So, you know the show? It's Error Code 8. You know the hosts. I'm Jesse. He's Sam. Let's get to some news. First thing on our list is the Acer Iconia A700. We've got some pictures that have leaked out, along with a few little specs from a Russian website, and a couple hints that say it's going to be at CES this year. Now, I truly don't doubt that this will be coming to CES. It's time for the Acer's flagship device right now is the A500. Now, that's an Android tablet, 10-inch screen, lots of really good ports, and it's a cheap tab. I mean, not cheap build-wise, but it's a very inexpensive tablet. It's, I believe, about $350 to $400, depending on where you go to get it, which is pretty good. It's a Tegra 2. You know the specs. They're pretty much the same across the Android board. The A700 is a little bit of an upgrade, however. It's going to have an almost unheard of 1920 by 1200 resolution display. That's pretty intense.
That is, and I'm actually curious about what the support for that's going to be now.
I'm not sure. It's one of those things where everybody's trying to compete with the iPad's big time Retina display. And some of these tablets are looking pretty good. The IPS displays look pretty good on like the Transformer.
They are phenomenal.
I just got to see the screen on a Transformer Prime. It has a super IPS display on it. It's unbelievable looking. Pardon me. The Nook tablet, the Nook Color, all these displays look really great, but they're not this resolution. I am very interested to see what this bump in resolution can get us. Also, some of the things, very noteworthy, instead of being the same Tegra 2 processor that you've seen all around the yard and all the kids riding it like the village bicycle, this one will have a Tegra 3 that's a quad-core NVIDIA processor. Gorgeous. I cannot wait. Now, because of that quad-core, it's going to suck down a little extra juice. The A700 is said to weigh 1.43 pounds, which is a little hefty, but that's partially due to the 9800 milliamp hour battery that's in the back of this sucker. So it's going to keep its long battery life, hopefully. They've gotten rid of a couple of the HD camera in the front for video. You get 5-megapixel camera in the back. All the standard ports. Now, the A500 had a full-size USB port. This one will not have that. It'll have a micro USB for data and a micro HDMI for video out, and that's about it. Now, that's pretty hefty. And what do you think? Is Acer going to try and price this the same as the A500 and just replace the 500, or is this going to be a premium tablet?
I'm going to say that this one will be a lead-in premium tablet to kind of test the market waters. Lots of companies are doing that right now, seeing if there is a market for a $500 tablet. When they first launched, all the tablets were predominantly $500 because of the iPad, but their hardware, I mean, they're a quarter of what this tablet is. You know, they were all, you know, may have been dual cores, but they were low-end dual cores, low speed. This is definitely seems to be, would them to lead in at $400 because this would replace my tablet gaming device easily. Gaming on this is going to be just stunning.
Yes, with that resolution display, that's going to be unbelievable.
Oh, and the speeds. Now, it doesn't mention RAM anywhere that I found so far, but I would expect it to be anywhere between one or a half a gig to a gig of RAM, which is industry standard now.
Yeah, you would think, and especially with that quad-core processor.
Oh, yeah.
I would even expect that if they're going to price this the same as the iPad, being that Android devices tend to be a smidge cheaper, they might be able to get away with even more.
This is true.
So, yeah, we're...
And that would dramatically help with the... I'm guessing this has to be intended as a high-end entertainment media device. With that resolution and with that processor, it's meant for movies and gaming. It doesn't have... The A500 is a great business device because of the USB hosting, having a full-size USB port on there. That lets you plug into your office and go accessing your files, moving it around from room to room to room very quickly and easily for those people who aren't doing it wirelessly yet.
Exactly.
Whereas this definitely looks to be more like a entertainment device.
Yeah, and as being a photographer myself, I'm slightly worried about losing the full-size USB port because that was one of the draws of the A500 to me, is that I could plug in a card reader and it would read the SD card to where I could transfer my pictures automatically in the field to a tablet and let my my subjects actually view their photographs right there in front of me.
Mm-hmm. Whereas now you're with this device, you'll still be able to, for those who have wireless, you know, the Bluetooth capable cameras that are coming out this year, and the other various, I know NFC is coming to a few cameras by the end of 2012.
Ooh, NFC, yeah.
Yeah. Which I don't think there's too many tablets that are really spouting that technology just yet, but I know it's a real big thing with cell phones.
That's true. And also, on a side note, Eric Schmidt mentioned that Google will be putting out a tablet sometime in the next 6 months. And if it's a Google tablet, you can guarantee it will have NFC.
Correct.
Yeah. All right. So that looks interesting. Look to CES 2012, which happens, I believe it's happening this next weekend. Pretty sure. So look there and get new news on it. If we see anything about it, we'll definitely post it up on the website. All right. Next on the docket is HTC. A while back, agreed that they were going to unleash a tool onto the entire internet that allows you to unlock your HTC phone's bootloader. Unlocking your bootloader allows you to install things like a custom recovery to where you can flash parts of the operating system onto the phone to change things. You can also flash entirely new operating systems. Basically, it makes your phone completely open and available to you to do whatever you want to with it, if that even includes breaking it, which a lot of people do. The tool is released. It's open. It's ready for being used. They do not support the tool, meaning they don't encourage you to use it because it will violate your warranty and it will be no more. But they have released the tool. It's worked on, let's see here, HTC officially says that it will work on the HTC Amaze, the Evo View 4G, the Design Flyer, and let's see, MyTouch 4G Slide, and the Sensation. Now, according to GigaOhm, several of the developers have been taking apart the tool and using it, and have also realized that it works on things like the Resound, the Vivid, the Rhyme, and the Thunderbolt. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you know, this opens the door to a lot of new options. With Android 4 coming out, I see good things. I really do.
With the open sourcing of WebOS, I see good things.
Ah, I had to kick it in there again. Yes,
I had to. WebOS.
WebOS is officially open source.
It's on its way.
Well,
we're waiting for the light. Yeah. But
it will be. There's nothing standing in its way. So, all right. Right.
But a View 4G with WebOS, yes, gladly.
Let's see here. Next thing we have is Verizon made a little bit of a trip up over the holidays. Now, normally, I'll say this to our listeners. Normally, these shows are going to be 30 to 45 minutes long. If this one runs a little long, I'm sorry, but we do have some back news from the holidays to cover. This one, within a day, this story broke and then literally broke in half and was no more. So, but I think it's interesting and it needs to be repeated. Verizon announced that starting in January, they were going to start charging all of their customers a $2 fee if they paid their bill online, over the phone, or by any means other than the auto pay feature. Now, autopay is where you set up a bank account, your phone bill automatically comes out without your consent, well, with your previous consent, but it just always comes out. Now, a lot of their customers did not like this, but as we know, big companies hardly ever listen to their customers, but there is one person they will listen to, and that is the government, because everybody listens to the government, right? So the government steps in and says, hey, We don't like that. That's not good news. And guess what Verizon does? Can you guess? Chickens out, big time.
Yay!
Well, you know, what can you say? It's one of those things with, to me, it just seems like it just seems like a company trying to chisel more, money out of their customers. You know, the FCC, of course, got involved. They don't like it. They're not going to let them do it. Verizon went back and said, hey, okay, we're not going to do this. We'll find another way. And, of course, that means they'll just tack on another fee to your bill of some sort that will charge you the $2. So, Verizon customers, you're still going to get bent over, but hey.
You know what's coming now.
That's what you get when you join Verizon. they're another company I don't completely trust. So, anyway. All right, next on our docket, we got one story from Sam here. I'm going to let him take this one. Tell me about the Raspberry Pi. Sounds delicious.
Well, I wouldn't recommend eating it. That's entirely up to you. But the Raspberry Pi is, in fact, not a food item. It is an incredibly small computer, roughly credit card sized. It's meant for educational purposes. It's coming with Linux. Either you can choose Fedora or Debian. And it's meant to help students and kids and people who can't afford high-end, some of the higher-end devices to run Linux on, a chance to learn C++ and the various controls for Linux. And so, well, it's the foundation of Android, the WebOS. It's going to become a huge part of the future of programming, and schools aren't teaching it. So you can pick up a Raspberry Pi. It's going to go on sale roughly during January. We don't have an exact date yet. Model A, $25. Model B, $35. The difference? Model B comes with an Ethernet port, 100 megabit per second port. Model A only has the USB ports, but you can get a wireless adapter to hook up to Wi-Fi on either of the models. Definitely interesting for it being $25 or $35. It's a 700 megahertz processor, so it's not like it's groundbreaking by any means. It's on par with 2 years ago on cell phones, which is actually what it is. It's a cell phone processor. But it uses micro USB charging. It can run on 4 AA's. I don't believe they're actually going to include the AA's as an actual option, but if you have a powered USB hub via that runs on battery, you can actually charge it via a USB hub.
Yeah. It looks very interesting, and it opens the doors to a lot of custom mods and, you know, computers that are built inside of things that were never meant to have a computer built inside of them, kind of like the VIA processors. When VIA did this kind of stuff, it opened up a whole new world of case mods for modders out there, and they put computers into darn near everything. Computer toasters, computer, you know, CD spindles, and a whole router that was a router and a computer. You know, so, I mean, it does open up a lot of doors and might be pretty interesting. You could install some sort of a Linux firewall on this, plug it directly, hardwire it directly into your router, install it in the router box, and you've got a router firewall in one piece. So,
exactly.
You know, this opens up a lot of doors. Might be interesting, and for that cheap, I mean, you know, it's almost throwaway money where you can buy one to try it, and if you don't like it, you don't really feel like you know, got ripped.
Exactly. And right now, Ubuntu does not have support for it, and that means the Ubuntu distributions, such as Backtrack, don't either. They are working with that. There's a group of people. Obviously, it's the open source community. They'll get it working eventually.
Oh, yeah.
But I'm definitely interested in regards to Backtrack. And nothing is more fun than having a credit card size hacking machine.
This is true.
Pick up a seven inch TV screen from, you know, like Best Buy or Radio Shack or somewhere during Christmas, and you're looking for $100, and you've got everything you need to start doing things anonymously, we'll say.
Yeah, you could get one of those little portable TVs in the olden days that people used to have.
Yeah, it's got a RCA output, so it will hook up to those. I mean, go to a flea market or a pawn shop, and those should be super cheap at this point in time because they don't work anymore for TV.
Exactly. So then you've got a handheld hacking device. Put a touchpad on the bottom of it, use the on-screen keyboard, boom. Very interesting. Exactly. Very interesting. All right. Next thing. Now, SSD memory. It's pretty fast. You know, when you put a SSD in a MacBook, that thing screams pretty good. Now, up until now, all of the supercomputers in the world used hard drives because hard drives are cheap. Now, what happens if you take those extra fast SSDs and slap them in a supercomputer? Why don't you tell us a little?
You end up with one of the fastest machines and, well, fastest anything known to man. Thanks to, Intel. What's that?
I said it's known to man.
With Intel's new, trying to think of the correct word for this. They're interconnected processors. More or less, they've taken a bunch of solid-state drives, linked them all together over and over and over and over and over and over again. Up until you get a supercomputer. It's named Gordon, after Flash Gordon. Appropriately geeky.
It seemed like it needed fanfare. And,
yeah.
You know, I just got that joke, by the way. SSDs, flash memory, Flash Gordon. That's awesome.
Yes. Yep. You have to love the geek world. I mean, there's a...
We're a clever bunch.
Oh, yes. But you're looking at a machine with 320 terabytes of flash memory.
Hmm.
That is...
I could stream my movies off that.
Oh, yeah. What is it? It's got room for 300,000... equivalent Netflix servers.
Yeah, it has that's 100, insane. It has 1,024 Sandy Bridge nodes, each of them carrying two separate processors and 64 gigabytes of DDR3 memory.
Yep.
The Crysis would have no prayer. It would run through Crysis. I would love to see what the 3D Mark scores for this computer are.
What? Even just standard, let me see, down to, its latency is practically nothing.
Well, I can only imagine. Parallel file system itself. Okay, your average hard drive reads at, how fast do you think? I never could remember. It's a hard drive. See,
I don't
now,
recall.
In a previous episode of the regular podcast, I talked about doing the Google Shuffle, and how you don't want to you don't really want to try to Google something that might be misconstrued, like the dude's toilet. Hard drive data transfer speeds, I don't think can be misconstrued, so we'll go with that, and hopefully that doesn't get me in trouble.
But we're looking at a bandwidth here just for the RAM itself at 56 gigabytes per second.
All right. And the hard drive normal transfers out of a 7200 RPM hard drive is about 1,000 megabits per second, give or take. Depends on the hard drive, you know, how old it is. This one is can hold sustained rates of transfer up to 100 gigabits per second.
Yes.
That is literally like 100 times more just transfer speed. That just blows my mind.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool stuff.
I'll say, when you're looking at a machine that is required to do over 200 trillion calculations per second, and that's its job for the rest of its existence, you need something that's really fast, and that's what this machine is. We saw roughly last year, the Watson coming out, the computer that was on Jeopardy, and this is 1,000 times faster at dedicated tasks. And it's been a year.
So
just been a year.
Let me ask you this. In your opinion, how long until we reach deep thought?
It depends on whether or not I would say by the end of this year, if the Mayans are correct. If not, I would give it 5 years for simple thought and 8 years for complex. taking the step. So in 8 years when we're still doing this podcast, we'll see if I'm right.
Yeah. See, it's every time I see one of these new supercomputers come out, the only thing I can think of is Douglas Adams' books, The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, where the Magrathians create the supercomputer Deep Thought to solve the answer to life, the universe, and everything. It's good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Next.
42.
This one is our last little blurb, and I found this extremely interesting. I follow Andy Anatko, which is a writer for the Sun-Times, the Chicago Sun-Times, on Twitter, and he tweeted this story, and I found it quite interesting because it kind of goes towards everything I've always been saying about online piracy, and with SOPA being so high in the news, that's the Stop Online Piracy Act, I thought this was very fitting. He tweeted that that online piracy was nowhere on this list, and I'm like, ooh, what list is that? I got to reading. This is by Roger Ebert. It's on rogerebert.com. We have a link in the show notes for you. He creates a list of six reasons that movie ticket sales have gone down in theaters. I'm not going to read the whole thing because it's kind of long-winded, but I'll just go through them real quick for you here. One, this year's absence of a movie like Avatar or The Dark Knight, so the huge blockbusters everyone's running out to get. Two, ticket prices are too high, and I feel like I should have probably been auto-tuned when I said that. Ticket prices are way high. Anyway, you can't do that, so I just won't do that anymore. Number three, the theater experience. Because of fanboys, fangirls, all this crap, they're really loud. I'm one of those people. I really am. I hate going. When I go to movies on opening day, it's always a matinee before like noon because I don't want to deal with the crowds. I don't want to deal with the little teeny boppers out there who are always loud. And I know it's not all of the teens because there are teens like I was who are pretty quiet. But one bad apple ruins the batch. Refreshment prices. Ugh, that's obvious. A $15 bucket of popcorn that could feed a family of 12 is no need for me. Competition from other forms of delivery. We're talking Netflix, Hulu, Crackle, all, you know, Amazon Prime, all the movie streaming services. Why leave your house when you could stream a movie to your couch? And if you could stream a movie to your couch, you know, TVs nowadays are so cheap for, you know, a 30 to 40, 50, 60 inch TV. You know, it's kind of a moot point. And the number six one, lack of choice. It's, you know, there's only a couple movies that come out at a time, and those are the ones that, you know, theaters put those movies in like three or four different theaters to fill all of their capacity. But, you know, if you don't want to see two of those movies and there's only four, it's not a choice. It's a lack of options. So notice, however, and out of all six of those, online piracy wasn't one of them, you know? I've always said that someone who is willing to pirate something online probably would not have paid for it in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, if you pirate a movie online on opening day, you weren't going to go see it in the first place. I mean, you either were too lazy to go see it, you didn't have enough money to go see it, or you just didn't want to see the movie bad enough to go pay for it, in which case, the theater's not going to get your money no matter what. Now, if you watch the movie, you like it, you might go see it in theaters. So, that's that teeter-tottering thing where is piracy helping some people? Is it hurting other people? We will never know. And hopefully SOPA never has to pass for us to find out, because that would suck. All right.
Oh, yes.
So, that has been the first episode of Error Code 8. So tell it, you know, in the comments, or you can email us and tell us what you think. Sam, why don't you tell our new listeners where they can find, follow, and or stalk you?
The easiest place is actually Twitter. Even though I don't actually say much, but I'm always logged on, so you can always message me and I will respond. But I'm the Manatee Man at, on Twitter, the Manatee Man at Gmail. Here on the for Error Code 8 on 8 Days of Geek, I am Sam Briggs at what's the new email address here?
It's Sam Briggs at 8daysofgeek.com.
There we go. Sambergs at 8daysofgeek.com.
Yay.
That should be all the places you can find me. If you find me somewhere else, you're really digging.
All right. For us, or for me, you can find me. My email is jesse at 8daysofgeek.com. I'm on Twitter. That's a good place to find me. It's at Pin of Doom. You can go to my about.me account. That's about.me/Jesse Miller and find all my other stuff. It's all there. My Google Plus, my blog, all that stuff. Now, we're going to keep the original website phone number for all of the podcast, and that way we don't have to worry about juggling so many voicemails. If you'd like to send us a text message or leave us a voicemail, what you do is you just call this number, tell us what podcast it's for, and then boom. In the transcription, it'll be sent to the correct people. We'll be set. Now, to send a text or leave a voicemail, you need to send it or call 754-273-6397. And in case the circuit boards were lodged a little too far in your ears from Sam's talk about SSDs and supercomputers, that number is 754-273-6397. All right, guys, we are done. We actually got in under our time limit. I'm very proud. Now, when the tech news really drums up, because it's the holidays, it's pretty dead. That was 2 weeks worth of news, in all honesty. Once the holidays pass and we get CES and all this good stuff, we've got a lot more for you. So stay with us. We're going to be trying to have some guests on later in the show. And hopefully you guys like it. You know, you tech fiends will get your tech fix. And if you want to listen to any of our other podcasts, coming to the 8 Days of Geek Network. I wish I could speak today. For some reason, I'm getting tangled up. Coming to our network, we have a comic book podcast called Off the Rack. We will have a movie and TV podcast, both respectively called All the Rage Movies and All the Rage TV. We will be having we have the tech-only podcast, Error Code 8, you're listening to. And then we also have a gaming podcast called Brandon and Jesse's 8 Bits. So, join us next week. You know, all those are once a month. This one we'll give you weekly, so you just keep coming back every week, and we'll knock around the tech news like a 12-year-old knocks around. Anyway, we're going to not do that. We're not going to do that at all. Too much
and
talk.
And if we do, we won't talk about it.
Yeah. No.
Yeah.
All right. Sam, you want to go ahead and tell the people goodbye?
Everyone, have a great day, great week. See you next week.
Awesome. All right, see you guys later and join us next week. Kind of sounds like R2-D2.
It actually, it reminds me of Perfect Dark on the N64.
Ah, that's a good point.